Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In recent years, modern medicine has made huge strides in helping chronically ill children live longer. That's good news for many kids and their families. But when it comes to managing pain, emotional distress, and discomfort, the news is less good.
Just a few years back, the New England Journal of Medicine and the Journal of the American Medical Association published a study on the care of children with terminal cancer. It found that the vast majority of their parents, almost 90%, said their children had suffered a lot or a great deal in the last months of their lives, and that nearly a quarter of them were often afraid.
It's a reminder of the limits of medicine and of what's often missing in the care of chronically ill children. And it's why an increasing number of hospitals are employing palliative care programs, which include teams of doctors, nurses, case managers, bereavement counselors, and others who help families manage their children's care.
It's an approach that was pioneered here in Boston, and early studies suggest it's good for kids and their families, and that it even saves money. But it's also controversial because it runs counter to the current direction in healthcare.
Dr. Jerome Groopman wrote about this and the latest thinking in pediatric palliative care here in Boston, the current issue of the New Yorker. He's the chief of experimental medicine at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. And Jerome Groopman joins us now. Great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you.
I want to start a little bit talking about how you started your story in the New Yorker. You talk about the case of 11-year-old Gwen Lorimer. She's been in and out of hospitals her entire life, suffering from a rare disorder of the mitochondria, which in effect deprives her organs of the energy they need to function. So a really serious case in which she's been operated on again and again, received a new liver, new stomach, small intestine, pancreas, spleen. So more than anything, she seems to represent the sort of amazing advances that medicine's made. But even so, something was missing. What was missing early on in her care?
What was missing was someone, a pediatrician and a team, that could help her parents and her in three ways. First, to make difficult decisions. Every treatment is a trade-off. Every choice involves risk and benefit, and it's highly individual. The second is children like Gwen have 15 or 20 doctors. And each one, as Gwen told me, it's the blind man and the elephant. The cardiologist may be looking at the heart, the gastroenterologist at the stomach, but there was no one with the overview who could see her as a whole person. And then because of this rare disease she has these unpredictable, capricious flares of pain. Mm-hmm. And that was not well controlled. So she was getting wonderful care at wonderful institutions, but she needed something more. She's a new kind of child, in a way, and she needed a new kind of pediatrician.
So before we talk about the new kind of pediatrician, why a new kind of child? You mean because she is living longer with chronic illness?
She's living longer, and no one would imagine that a child like this would survive. She had a multi-organ transplant at Boston Children's. She had her stomach, spleen, liver, intestine. And she named each of her organs, she told me.
Yeah, she sounds like she's really on top of what's
happening.
She's
on top of it. And these children would not have lived without this kind of intensive, high-tech intervention. On the other hand, they have fundamental needs that have to be addressed and are not addressed necessarily through high technology.
So tell us about a pediatric advanced care team, or PACT, that comes along and provides, that sort of fills in this missing link in her care. What is this pediatric advanced care team?
Well, we're here today with the director and founder who really created the field. And this is a group of specialists, physicians, nurse practitioners, social worker, chaplain, and so on, who focus on these kinds of children with a diverse spectrum of diseases. And they serve three functions. One is they get to know the family, the child, and the parents, and they help with these difficult decisions in a highly individual way. Mm-hmm. Then among these 12 or 15 different doctors with tests being ordered, coming in and out of the hospital, they coordinate the care. And third is they try to maximize quality of life and reduce suffering. And children like Gwen, because of her underlying disease, are prone to these kinds of excruciating flares of pain, which aren't controlled with standard analgesics.
Well, you mentioned that the founder is here with us. It's Dr. Joanne Wolf. She's the founder and director of the Pediatric Advanced Care Team at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and Boston Children's Hospital. She's also an associate professor of pediatrics at Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Joanne Wolf, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
It's wonderful to be here today.
So I'd love to ask you, you founded the Pediatric Advanced Care Team, or PACT, back in 1997. It was one of the first pediatric palliative care programs in the U.S. Why did you do it? I mean, what did you see was missing when you were practicing as a doctor before you founded this?
Well, it was clear to me very early on in my training that while the care delivered to children with serious illness was very high quality, as you noted in talking about Gwen, there was something missing. And I even experienced this in my own training as a pediatric oncologist. I was trained to think about the disease, to think about the best way to treat the disease, but sometimes I forgot to take a step back and think about the whole child as a person. Mm-hmm. And it's a natural inclination when we're trying to do the very best by our patients to focus on the best way to help them live as long as possible. But I recognized, especially through some difficult experiences, that we needed to add an extra layer of support to these children and their families through an interdisciplinary team to think about the whole patient in the context of caring for them. Mm.
So who's on this team, this interdisciplinary team?
We have doctors, nurse practitioners, and social workers, and we partner very closely with other clinicians in the hospital, such as chaplains, child life specialists, psychologists. We mobilize the resources that are helpful for the whole child and family.
Mm. I mean, on one level, and Jerome Groopman, I'll come back to you, this seems so basic, because what this team does is really treat these children like children and relate to families like families with individual needs, right?
That's true. And Dr. Christina Ulrich, who's an attending now in PACT and was one of the first trainees of Dr. Wolf, said in some ways it's sort of reinventing the wheel and rediscovering medicine in the way you want to practice medicine. Mm. Mm. But what's happened is throughout the country, partly because of the economic pressure and so on, the hospital has been reconfigured almost like a factory, mm-hmm. and everything's about efficiency. And there is an overlay now of anonymity, where people just, you know, move through as quickly as possible. And there's a lot of shift change, there's a lot of personnel change and so on. And that stability of one group of specialists who knows you as the child and your parents can get lost in the shuffle.
Is this what you mean when you say that this approach, which seems to make so much sense, runs counter to the way the system is presently set up?
Very much so. And also, the system has become very formulaic, very generic. There are all of these guidelines and algorithms and so on. But as one of the palliative care specialists from the University of Pennsylvania said, these are the kids who don't fit there.
Yeah.
They're off the pathway. There may be three or four like them. And Gwen is Gwen. And so you can't just, you know, go into a computer and find a algorithm that's going to tell you how to care for Gwen. Mm. Nor can you find decision making as some script, because each family has different needs and values.
So, Dr. Wolf, how difficult is it to sort of fit this into the system that's out there? Do you encounter resistance from doctors who were there that might be reluctant to sort of welcome in this team of counselors, of doctors, of case managers?
I would say early on in the development of the field of pediatric palliative care in the late 90s, early 2000s, there wasn't a clear understanding of the added value of a palliative care program. And so absolutely we encountered resistance, and there were misunderstandings, in fact, about confusing what palliative care intended to do, which is to elicit values and goals from families and what's most important to them, and then help to fulfill those goals alongside families and the teams that take care of them. Increasingly, however, there's a much better understanding and clarity that with partnership through palliative care, I think everybody feels as though they're serving patients and their families in a much better manner. And so it sort of brings added value not only to the children and their families, but also the clinicians that are caring for them.
Is there a risk? Because I read Jerome Groopman's piece, I wondered, and I think actually he mentioned this himself. I mean, is there a risk that it complicates the care? That is, by bringing in more people with more ideas and more stuff to bring to one particular case?
I do think that, in general, the care of children with complex illness have a lot of subspecialists involved, and there is always a risk when you add an extra team that it will complicate things further. But it's part of our training to know actually how to facilitate care and facilitate the communication amongst all the team members that are involved in caring for a child that adds the value as opposed to adding to complexity.
Yeah.
It's sort of part of our expertise to know how to negotiate those complex waters and bring communication and clarity to the care of a child.
And Jerome Groopman, as you sort of looked at this and studied it and went on rounds, I know you saw a lot of these doctors and members of these teams do their thing. I'd love to hear a story about sort of, I don't know, how this works when it works best.
Well, I think Gwen's story, told to me by her parents, is very much that way. Here she has this extraordinary, miraculous transplant of five organs. Mm. But 5 months later, because her immune system is lowered so as not to reject these donated organs, she develops a life-threatening lymphoma-like disease. 50 tumors riddling her body. She's in excruciating pain. She's on the surgery service, the transplant surgery service, and they try initial measures to combat this, and it's not working. And all day long, this different doctors are coming, sending her for tests and so on, and she's not getting better. And one group of specialists, the cancer specialists, say she needs to be transferred off this floor. We need her on our floor. She needs chemotherapy. We have to take over. And this transplant surgeon say no. She has transplanted organs. We know what we're doing. She stays with us. And so the family...
What do they do?
Right.
How do they make the decision?
Yeah. Right. And it happened that the parents were familiar, Kim and Sue, with PACT. They had heard about PACT. Mm-hmm. And they insisted that PACT be called in. And as Joanne said, it wasn't as though they were sort of breaking an arm wrestle, but they got everyone together and say, how can this work for Gwen's best interests? Mm-hmm. And negotiated it so that egos weren't bruised, but things were done in the best way possible. And it turned out she stayed on the surgery service, got her chemotherapy with the right oversight, and had a complete remission.
Wow. I mean, it's just so interesting because, of course, every doctor wants to do his or her best to cure a kid, but every doctor's decision about what he or she thinks is the right thing to do might not be the right thing to do for that kid. I mean, it's such a complicated set of issues.
And we're in an era of healthcare where we are pushing the envelope in a beautiful and very successful way for children like Gwen who wouldn't otherwise be living. And that's because clinicians are willing to think outside the box, but you have to bring those ideas together and develop a cohesive approach in order to be successful, and that's part of the work of our team.
Hmm. What about cost? And Jerome Groopman, you wrote about this. I mean, caring for children with chronic illnesses, it's expensive. At one point in the piece, you quote the director of the University of Rochester Medical Center who says, this model adds another layer of specialized care for the severely ill, and he suggests that it only be used in the most complicated cases, right?
Well, there's some truth to that. The problem is that certainly the complexity of these children outstrips what most primary care pediatricians who are seeing scores of kids a day and have a general knowledge.
Sure.
It outstrips their expertise, and the specialists are trying to address their particular organ. So that in an ideal world, yes, we could restore the primary care pediatrician, but he or she rarely has either the time or the background to handle this. And so it is true that his points, and I think Joanne is trying to do this at Harvard Medical School, is to have some level of understanding among the general pediatrician how to make decisions, how to facilitate these choices. Certainly how to know when you're in over your head, particularly with things like pain management. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the initial studies, and these are still early days, this is highly cost effective. A study done in California that was published from the University of California, Los Angeles, reduced the costs on a yearly basis by 35%. I mean, that's an enormous saving without any impairment in the quality of care of these kids.
Hmm. Doesn't this, Joanne Wolfe, also point to this problem of how little training there is in general in palliative care? I mean, I know Jerome writes about this. For example, he notes that 4 years of training at Harvard Medical School includes only a half day of study in hospice and palliative care. Do I have that right? I mean, I kept rereading
that
and saying,
right.
No, it must be a half a year, a half a month, a half a day.
I'm tenured. I can write that.
As a matter of fact, we had that half day of training just yesterday, and I noted, though, in the context of giving a lecture to the medical students, that part of their training comes from their day-to-day encounters in the hospital, and they themselves, as learners, need to push themselves to figure out the best way to integrate palliative care to their patients and demand that of the teams that they're working with. As you noted, there is this new subspecialty of pediatric palliative care, and I agree completely with Dr. Quill, who you referenced in Rochester, that we're not only a subspecialty group that delivers care to the more complex patients, but it's our mandate to push the envelope academically as well, to educate others about basics of palliative care, and to do the research that's necessary to uncover better ways to take care of these children and their families. Mm. So it goes beyond clinical care, though that's a very important piece of what we do.
It really does go beyond, and in such moving ways. Jerome, toward the end of the piece, you tell a very touching story about the kind of concern that a packed team would deal with, and you describe a small boy dying of neuroblastoma, and he has fears about dying, and his mother makes it clear to him that she would see him again in heaven, but he's worried about how he's going to find her, so they make a plan to meet her in the front left corner of heaven. It's almost hard to sort of talk about this without becoming emotional. But I mean, these very touching and very close to the heart values that you have to think about when you're treating a child.
And I think that the sensibility and the expertise that the PAC team brings allows for these kinds of conversations and concerns and so on, because really, you know, care has become so hurly-burly and so pressured and so time-sensitive. And these kinds of issues can't be done in a two-minute checklist.
Yeah.
This requires conversation and concern and personal knowledge and training and background. And I found this extraordinarily emotionally gripping to meet these families and, frankly, the PAC team as specialists. I was deeply, deeply moved by what they do.
Well, I was too. It was a great piece to read. We have a link to it, by the way, listeners. That's Jerome Groopman's New Yorker piece at radioboston.org. Dr. Jerome Groopman, thank you so much for coming in and sharing it with us. I'm really grateful.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Jerome Groopman. He's chief of experimental medicine at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. He's also a staff writer at The New Yorker. And as we said, you can find a link to his piece at radioboston.org. And Dr. Joanne Wolfe, many thanks to you.
Thank you very much.
She's the founder and director of the Pediatric Advanced Care Team, or PACT. It's a joint a palliative care program between Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and Boston Children's Hospital.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. Join us again tomorrow for more.